Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
So I just welcome you all this morning. I wanted to just say that we welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, or family structure. And we welcome you no matter what your age or your abilities or your inabilities. Later in the service, we will be welcoming visitors and friends and guests and returning friends who are here at Prairie UU, and we look forward to getting to know all of you better. On Sunday mornings here at Prairie, we provide a variety of services, and they are presented either by a member of Prairie, a member of the wider community, or by me, your current part-time minister. And today, Marty Drapkin is going to be our presenter, and a little bit later, before I introduce Marty, I will read his short bio, and very glad that we have a nice turnout today for this very important and relevant and interesting service. Our service today is going to be a presentation on educating the jailers, presented by Marty Drapkin, and I will read just a little bit about Marty, and then he can present himself in more detail when he comes forth. A former Prairie member, Marty Drapkin is the director of Wisconsin's program for training county jail officers, working for the Wisconsin Department of Justice. He has been involved in jail officer training for more than 30 years, and he has also written several books and numerous articles on jail issues. He is also the author of a novel, Now and at the Hour, which is set in a mental institution. So we welcome Marty this morning.
Thank you, Reverend Jane. Morning, everybody. Glad to be here. My presentation is a little bit of a follow-up to Margaret Carpenter's presentation last week, for those of you who are blessed to be here and hear that great presentation. Margaret talked about prisons, state prisons, where she works, and I'm going to talk a little bit about county jails, which is what I'm involved in. So what I'm going to do is talk a little bit about three issues and then open it up for questions, because I'm not sure what kinds of issues you're really interested in. So I'm going to talk a little bit first about the difference between jails and prisons, then a little bit about training of jail officers, and then just some issues that have to do with county jails, and then we'll see how that goes. So anyway, Margaret talked last week about prisons. She works for the State Department of Corrections and is the education director for that large bureaucratic agency. So prisons are not the same as jails. Sometimes the terms are used interchangeably, but they're different. Prisons are either state institutions, as Margaret talked about, or federal. Dave Johnson, for example, last week mentioned that he'd been a volunteer for the federal prison here in Wisconsin, which is at Oxford Correctional Institution, they call it. County jails, on the other hand, are county institutions. So that's who they're operated by, and so there's a number of differences between them. Prisons hold, everybody who's in a prison has been found guilty of a criminal offense and sentenced to serve time there. So Margaret, for example, last week said that the people are there as punishment, not for punishment, meaning that the fact that they're incarcerated, their freedom is taken away, is the punishment. Punishment for having been found guilty of committing a crime. So that's what that is. County jails are very different, however. Some of the people in county jails are there as punishment, but many of them are not. Why? Because county jails hold a lot of different types of people, some of whom have been found guilty and are sentenced to serve time in a county jail, often with what's called Huber privileges, but for short periods of time. Prisons, people are often there for many years. County jails, it could be weeks, months, up to a year, sometimes a little bit longer, but much relatively shorter periods of time than is true of prisons. But many of the people in county jails who are incarcerated in county jails are not there because they've been guilty and are there as punishment. Instead, they're there for the purpose of they're arrested, they're brought to jail, they stay in jail perhaps for a period of time for detention so that as a guarantee that they'll be available for court appearances, hearings, trials, that sort of thing. Many, of course, are released on some form of release, personal recognizance, bond, bail, things like that at some point, either early on or a little bit later, but many are not. And so they're there for that purpose, for detention, not as a form of punishment. You can't be punished until you're found guilty of having done something. County jails also hold a lot of people for other purposes, people who are in transit from one place to another, people who are there on probation holds. In other words, they're out in the community on probation, and their probation officer feels that they violated some condition of their probation, so they bring them to the county jail, and they're incarcerated there on while the probation people are determining whether what to do with them, which may include revoking them, which means revoking their probation ability to be free and perhaps returning them to jail or prison. So county jails do a lot of different things. It's much simpler in a way in prisons because they sort of hold just people who are found guilty and are serving a term of incarceration as a form of punishment. So people are in jail generally for much shorter periods of time, some longer, but many shorter. So oftentimes people are only in jails for days or weeks. In Wisconsin, we have 72 counties, 71 of which have county jails. The only one that doesn't is Menominee County, which is primarily the Menominee tribe, and they have a tribal jail. But all the other 71 counties have jails, some very big, some very small. Milwaukee is the biggest, 3,000 inmates. Dane County has about 1,000 or a little bit less. It's probably the second biggest. But many in some of the rural counties are very small, you know, 20 inmates, something like that. So there's a great variation between them. Jails are under the control of a sheriff who's an elected official for 4 years. So he or she is sort of the main person that has a number of responsibilities, the biggest of which in a county sheriff's department is running the jail. They're funded by county boards of supervisors. They make the, so they're also elected officials. So you have an elected official that runs the place and elected officials who make funding decisions on them. No surprise, it's political. And so politics, unfortunately, I guess, sometimes fortunately, enters into decisions on what happens in county jails. And maybe I'll talk a little bit more about that later. Another kind of a big difference between jails and prisons that enters into a lot of what I do in terms of the training is that a big characteristic of county jails is uncertainty on the part of the inmates, prisoners who are in county jails. When people go to prison, they've been found guilty, they have a rough idea of how long they're going to be there. So that uncertainty is gone. Now, it's tough to be in prison, but at least there's not that uncertainty. People come to county jails and they don't know what's going to happen to them. Many of them are, how long are they going to stay there? What's going to happen to them in the legal system? Is their probation going to be revoked? Are they going to get a long sentence? Are they going to go to prison? What's going to happen? And their fate is out of their hands because now they're in the criminal justice system, and the criminal justice system is big and powerful. There's police, there's courts, there's prosecutors, there's defense attorneys, there's jails, there's prisons. It's a big thing, and here's this little guy. Their fate is out of their hands. So there's a lot of uncertainty. There's plea bargaining, and so lawyers are making decision, courts are making decision, and here I sit. You know, I'm in this place, and they're telling me what to eat, and where I'm going to be housed, and you know, I may be in a cell with several other people, and there's a toilet over there, and I'm going to the bathroom in front of others, and I haven't done anything yet. I'm not guilty. So it's a tough deal for many people. And as I'll say, a lot of people in county jails have a number of problems, medical, mental health, alcohol and drug abuse. So a lot of factors enter into it to make it kind of a tough deal, not for everybody, but for many people. So there's that difference also between jails, county jails and prisons, is the level of uncertainty. And as you know, Margaret, there's not to say that it's easy for people in prisons, not at all. But the uncertainties and the pressures are a little bit different in many ways. So I'll go back to that. In terms of jail officer training, which, as Reverend Jane said, I work for the State Department of Justice, and we have a little bureaucratic agency that I work for. It's called the Training and Standards Bureau, which is in charge of training of law, basic recruit-level training of law enforcement officers, jail officers, and people working in secure juvenile detention facilities. The way it works in our state is that, well, first of all, the people who work in county jails, again, they're county employees, not state employees, and they're either deputies or civilian correctional officers, depending on the county. In Dane County here, for example, the people working in the Dane County Jail are deputies. They're law enforcement officers, and so what they do is they work in the county jail for a few years, and then they do what they really want to do, which is be out on the street in a car with a badge and a gun and all like that. That's what they want to do. So that's true in a number of counties. In other counties, they're hired just as civilian correctional officers, not law enforcement officers. So all they do is work in the jail. The way it works is that the state has the responsibility of doing basic training of them, whether they're deputies or civilian correctional officers. We set the standards for what the training is. We certify the training academies, certify instructors, that sort of thing. Currently, the training course for jail officers is 160 hours in length. So again, we set the curriculum, training requirements, basic training materials, that sort of thing. And the training is actually delivered regionally throughout the state. In other words, we don't have a centralized training academy. It's regional, and most of the places are state technical colleges. Or in some cases, they're what we call employer-based academies, like the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Department, that sort of thing. But they all have to do the same basic curriculum. The training for people who work in the state prisons is longer. I'm not sure it's about 6 weeks, 8 weeks, something like that.
It's about 2-3 months.
2-3 months, okay, yeah. So it's a lot longer.
And it's also ongoing.
Yeah. We also have a requirement that once somebody goes through that training and is certified as a jail officer, they then have to get 24 hours of training annually, but we don't set any requirements for the training. It's a local decision. And when a person is certified to work as a jail officer, he or she is eligible to work in any jail in the state. So they can go from here to there because it's all the same basic training. So this 160-hour course is designed to give them what we call basic knowledge and skills about how to do the job of working in a county jail, which isn't an easy job. So the course covers issues such as sort of an overview of corrections, a little history of corrections, the basic goals and purposes of jails, ethics, ethical decision making, big issue, interpersonal communication skills, which is the biggest issue, because basically we're, the main thing is to teach people how to communicate with other people, with inmates. Mary made mention to treating people nicely and fairly. Well, that's basically what we're trying to do, what's involved in all of that. How to talk to people, how to listen to people, listening skills, how to ask questions, how to respond to questions. And that's really the biggest issue, because a lot of people coming into jails come in, no surprise, with somewhat of an authoritarian attitude. And it takes them a while to grasp that thing, that people are there as punishment, not for punishment. They sometimes have the attitude, well, I am the agent of punishment, so to speak. You know, I'm going to teach these people, that sort of thing. So it's not easy, but we do the best we can, and we're continually improving that part of it. But I think that's the most important thing that we try to do, is to listening or communication skills undergirded by an attitude, which is to treat people politely, respectfully, with dignity. And if we can do that, basically, then I think we've accomplished a lot. It also covers skills in supervising inmates, fraternization, that sort of thing. And a big part of it is supervising what we call special inmates, which means those who have, those who may be emotionally distressed, mentally ill, which is a big problem in jails, as I'll mention, possibly suicide risks, developmental disabilities, sexual orientation issues, lots of different categories like that. So we spend a fair amount of time in the training focusing on that. And a lot of that is, it's a combination of education and training. In regard to people with mental illnesses, mental disorders, A lot of it is education in the sense that we try to focus on understanding of mental illness, for example, what goes into it, what it's all about. Because as you know, there's a lot of misunderstanding about that, a lot of stigma attached to mental disorders. And so we have to face that first and then get into the training aspect, which is how do you now deal with people who may have mental disorders? And we spend a fair amount of time on what we call serious and persistent mental illnesses, serious depression, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, and anxiety disorders. Anxiety disorders, a lot of people have them. So anyway, we deal with that, and that's a big issue. Legal issues, you know, what are the legal responsibilities when you work in a jail? What are the basic court standards that have been set down so that they have an understanding of that? State rules, statutes, report writing, admitting and releasing people, security procedures, you know, how to do counts and cell checks. So it's a variety of education on the one hand to sort of understand the terrain, and then training specific skills on the other hand. Use of force is a big part of it. So it's, you know, pretty good program. Part of the problem with it is that, you know, we're doing basic training. It's recruit level training. Now they go back to those counties. Now in those 71 county jails that I mentioned, some are progressive, some are do a pretty good job. Some have a good climate that they're working in. Sometimes the sheriff who runs the place or the jail administrator makes clear to his people that he or she expects them to treat people politely, respectfully, so on and so forth. In other cases, that doesn't happen. So the training, the basic training that the state does, sort of can only go so far. If the people in that particular jail don't reinforce that and set a kind of a tone, if you will, sometimes it can be a problem. Just some key issues in jails, aside from the training. I mentioned before that uncertainty is a big issue among people who are in jails, and that leads to a lot of what I call emotional crisis situations. People in jails, very common. They come in, many of them come in, they're intoxicated on alcohol or drugs, and then they sober up, and if they stay in jail, the uncertainty of jail, the experience of being in jail, the unsureness about what's going to happen to them, being away from their loved ones, being away from their employment, if they have that, not knowing what's going to happen to them in court, their fate being out of their hands, leads to a fair amount of uncertainty and emotional crisis to one degree or another. So we have to train people to deal with that, to recognize symptoms of somebody being in an emotional crisis and dealing with that, you know, acting out behavior and that sort of thing. So officers have to be trained to recognize and deal with that quite a bit, early on and later on, as I'll make mention of. Another issue is that because people are in jail generally for relatively short periods of time, it's hard to do effective treatment of them in a lot of ways, certainly mental health treatment. Margaret made mention last week to education and talked about what's being done in the prison system in terms of education. Well, you know, the prison system, people are there for a long period of time, you can sort of do things. County jails, not so much. Some jails do a pretty good job of education programs, whether it's adult basic education or more commonly GED is probably the most important thing that happens in jails. But unfortunately, most inmates are not there long enough to really take advantage of that or to benefit from that. But again, some do better than others. Another problem, and I may mention too briefly, is that because jails are county government, you know, with elected officials and county government, there's really a great variation I've seen over the many years I've been doing this in sort of the level of professionalism in counties and level of commitment to programming for inmates. And it's due to a number of factors. One is that they're elected officials who, to some degree or another, have to kind of, I don't want to use the word pander, but I guess that's what it is, to their constituents, you know, tough on crime, we're not going to baby these people while they're here, that sort of thing. difficult financial times for counties more and more, which, so they don't have a lot of money for programming and amenities, and just simply different personalities. What I've observed is that the county boards of supervisors, the sheriffs, the jail administrators, depending on who's in there, they can be wonderful or they can be terrible. Just recently, for example, in a county in northwest Wisconsin near Eau Claire, we had a jail administrator there who had been there for many, many years. Great guy, ran a sewing machine repair business on the side. And so he, you know, was just a person who had a great level of commitment to, I mean, he was a, you know, a tough law enforcement type person on the one hand, but he also was a person who had a feeling for the needs of inmates on the other hand, and, you know, advocated for programs, educational programs, life skills programs, anger management type programs, all those things that are designed to help people even though they're in for a short period of time. Did a great job. He retired, was replaced by some guy who came from a prison out of state, came in with a hardcore attitude, boom, everything changed. That's what happens. And I'm sure it happens in state government, but I think it's more pronounced even at county government because of local politics and that sort of thing. Point being that, you know, sometimes you can do a certain amount in training, you do the best you can, and sometimes that doesn't work as well as it could because of personalities. But on the other hand, sometimes it works wonderfully the other way. She talked about education last week. One county I know, which is Sheboygan County, there's a woman in there who works for the local technical college system, and she's a real advocate of education. And she's one of these people who the word no is not in her vocabulary. Anything is possible. So she's been there for a number of years, and for her it doesn't matter who the elected officials are, the sheriff, the county board. She's successful in sort of steamrolling over all of them to get educational programs in that jail. It's just the personality. So there's just that variation. I guess that's just the way it is. And finally, another factor about jails, as I may mention too briefly, is that really there's people with just a wide variety of problems. A lot of people come in with medical problems, sometimes very serious medical problems, a lot of mental health problems. Jails, county jails, are actually, unfortunately, some of the biggest places that hold people with mental illnesses. Los Angeles County Jail, for example, is the biggest inpatient psychiatric facility in the United States right now. It is. That's true. Cook County Jail, Harris County, Houston, which is Houston, Texas, Rikers Island in New York. That's just reality. That's the place where people, because there aren't other places for them. So jails hold a lot of people with mental illnesses, substance abuse problems, lack of education, developmental disabilities, so on and so forth. And there just aren't other good places for them. There simply aren't good community treatment options. Some more and more there are diversion programs. In our state we have one, Eau Claire County has a mental health court. There are various drug courts. There's even a couple of veterans courts. So there are some things that are positive, but for the most part it's a fairly bleak picture. And so jails are not designed as treatment facilities. They're designed for a fairly narrow purpose, you know, in the criminal justice system. But de facto, they are treatment facilities. There are people there. So we're trying to do the best we can of training people to recognize and effectively deal with people with a wide variety of emotional, mental health, substance abuse problems. But it's one of those deals where sort of the best you can do is kind of tread water. And suicide is a factor in that regard. We always have more suicides in county jails than we should. In 2010, for example, we had 10, which is a high number, a lot of suicide attempts. And I think, just from what I know, a lot of that goes back to that sort of uncertainty and being sort of pawns in the criminal justice system. For example, just anecdotally, in county jails, we know that a lot of the suicide attempts and successful suicides are not necessarily people who have a serious and persistent mental illness, like serious depression or something like that. Instead, they're people who Well, a lot of people kind of come into jail, and they are have sort of low-grade depression and anxiety as a something that's a factor in their lives all the time. Now they're in jail at the hands of the criminal justice system. On the one hand, they're away from the sort of the things that they normally do to try to manage the stress that they have, which is unfortunately not always good things, alcohol, drugs, marijuana, that sort of thing. Now they're in jail, they don't have those stress relief factors, and they have stress because, you know, of a lot of things that are going on. As I said before, people are making decisions for them. So sometimes people will get a bad phone call, a letter, a visit, and very commonly they'll go to a court appearance, whatever it may be, or their lawyer will give them information. Things aren't going so well for them as they thought they might in the criminal justice system. They come back, and also a lot of them are people with poor impulse control, and so they deal with their problems in a negative way by making a suicide attempt. So county jails are dealing with people who have a fair amount of difficulties in life and emotional situations and that sort of thing. So that's what we're dealing with, and we're doing the best we can to try to, you know, help people do it. So it's a little bit of a conundrum in that it's a law enforcement agency, a sheriff's department, that runs a correctional facility. They're doing the best they can to be professional about it. It's not a treatment facility, but yet they're dealing with a lot of people who should be getting treatment. And the other thing that happens good in some places and not so good in other places is the cooperation between jail officials and treatment providers, county treatment providers, whether it's medical, mental health, substance abuse. Sometimes it works pretty well. Dane County works pretty well with the Dane County Mental Health Center, who staff the county jail in terms of the mental health. Other places it doesn't. So I'm just trying to give kind of an overview of the situation. And I think I'll stop there and just see what kinds of questions that you may have that we can talk about. It's sort of all over the board. Point of fact, people who work in county jails, starting anyway, are paid more than people who work in the State Department of Corrections as correctional officers. More so in some counties than in others. And I should have mentioned, in terms of requirements for people working in county jails, the requirement at the state level is a high school degree or high school diploma or equivalent. Whereas for law enforcement officers, the state requirement is that they have to have a minimum of 60 college credits to be a law enforcement. So there's that difference. But in point of fact, more and more, a lot of people working in jails come in with some education, primarily many four-year degrees, but a lot of them have two-year associate degrees in police science, corrections science, that sort of thing. So I don't know if that answered the question. Well, counties certainly go through that, and the State Department of Corrections certainly has hiring standards. They do background investigations and that sort of thing. I don't know if you want to say anything about that.
We also try to do some pre-screening type things, too, to make sure that people that we're getting are people that are going to fit in the environment and take a humane approach to services that are coming in.
She said that they do screening to try to determine beforehand that people who are hired are basically humane people and not trouble. Is that it, Margaret?
Yeah.
And that certainly happens at the county level, too. Now, it doesn't always work that neatly, but... One answer to that, you know, the sort of our whole philosophy of having jails and prisons is that people don't want to be there, that people would rather be free than be there. Reality is that some people, and this is a sad statement, but being incarcerated is better than what they know outside. Three meals a day, a roof, a bed, my own bed to sleep in, are you kidding me? People not whomping on me all the time, and that's a sad statement. And going back to what I said about people with mental illnesses, too, I mean, again, you would think somebody that would be a terrible thing. It is bad for people with mental illnesses to be incarcerated, no doubt about that. But something I've become aware of is that there are times when family members of people with mental illnesses are happy, mm-hmm. short term, that their people are incarcerated mm-hmm. because they're not out on the streets, they're not homeless, they're away from the drugs, the alcohol. I mean, think about that.
Right.
Think about what a situation that is, that family members are not happy, but
relieved,
I guess would be the word, that their loved ones are in a jail. Whoa. So I don't know if that answered your question, but yeah. And it goes even further than that. Being in jail for some people is better than what they knew otherwise. In other cases, being in jail is now a rite of passage for many people, for gang members and that sort of thing. It's like when I got a bar mitzvah, that was a rite of passage for me. The same deal. You know, it's, you know, you have to do that in order to progress to the next level, I guess. So the stigma of being locked up for many people just isn't there.
I just want to add something to what Marty is saying in that respect. We have actually seen, and not to a great degree, we've actually seen prisoners derail their release because they're afraid of going back and failing. I've actually watched that in the juvenile arena as well, them doing things and violating rules and regulations in order to prolong release. And that is a sad state. That's a sad state of existence for us in terms of our society. And I think that's where we need to continue to look at how do we change the services that we're providing as society so that we are diverting in the first place people going into jails and going into prisons. Because many times prison leads, jail leads right to prison,
yeah.
Which you've said, Marty. But we've watched that happen numerous times.
It's interesting that the main United States Supreme Court case on protection of inmates, if that being one of the issues, was based on a transgendered person. It's a 1994 case called Farmer versus Brennan, in which a person who was male, wanted to become a female, was on the way and was receiving hormone treatments, but had not yet had the surgery, was in a state prison, and so the hormone treatments give a person feminine characteristics, and so they placed him in a male general population area, because as you suggest, as long as you're physically a male, you're with other males. He was physically and sexually assaulted. He sued. It went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. The Supreme Court found the prison officials liable for failure to protect him adequately and established a standard that has applied since then, which is that once jail or prison officials are aware of a serious risk of threat, their failure to do something about it makes them liable for failure to protect. I mean, that's just one aspect of it. But from a training perspective, we teach that, but we also do the best we can to teach, you know, to talk a little bit about transgender people, which they're, the prison system is seeing more of them. In county jails, not that many, but county jails are seeing more people who are sort of getting hormone treatments a little bit. It is another legal issue in Wisconsin. You may be aware of this, that several years ago, the state legislature passed a law saying that taxpayer money could not be used for treatment, hormone treatment, I believe, and certainly for the surgery of people who were incarcerated. But anyway, that law, when it was passed by the legislature, was challenged by the ACLU and some other group, which I don't remember the name of, on the basis that the failure to provide that treatment would amount to deliberate indifference to a serious medical need of a prisoner. And they specifically cited there's a disorder, it's in the American Psychiatric DSM-IV, which is their Bible for diagnosing mental disorders, gender identity disorder, which is a serious disorder, which, as you suggest, causes depression, anxiety, suicidal feelings, and that sort of thing. I'm frankly not sure what happened to that challenge. Do you know?
I know what happened to that challenge for this state.
Currently, if the inmate comes into the system already on the treatment, we are required by law to continue that treatment at this point. And that's a recent ruling.
Before I step off, I just want to read one thing. Sauk County Jail did a nice thing called Memoirs from Behind the Gates, writings by inmates. I just want to read one. It's called Doing Time. I've been to jail. I've been to prison. I've lived a life in hell itself. The choices I made were the wrong ones, no doubt. I've tried to live the life without negatives in my sight, but everywhere I turned, drugs were within my bite. Big problem. I've always been responsible for the wrong choices, so now I want to live a better life and make all my dreams come true. Sooner or later, everything will come to me. My life will be true and free. My life will be as I dreamed, free and full of forgiveness from my pure hell. I will escape my drug-filled life and create a better one, which I know is within my sight. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Marty. And of course, Marty will be here afterwards. There's a luncheon afterwards and time for talking and asking more questions, because that was just the tip of the iceberg, I'm sure. So thank you very much. Where hate rules, let us bring love. Where sorrow, joy. Let us strive more to comfort others than to be comforted, to understand others than to be understood, to love others more than to be loved. For it is in giving that we receive, and in pardoning that we are pardoned. Go in peace.